The Senate has finally passed a cybersecurity bill. The Cybersecurity Information Sharing Act sailed through the Senate last week. Some people have concerns, though, about CISA's contents. Others say it's long overdue. Todd Helfrich is director of federal sales at ThreatStorm and writing about CISA on federalnewsradio.com. Todd, it's a great piece, and I thank you for submitting it, and we're happy to run it on federalnewsradio.com. Give me a thumbnail of the version of CISA that passed the Senate and what it might mean for agencies and for companies in the private sector. Thanks for coming on today, Todd.
Thanks for having me on the show, Francis. So last week it was a big success for CISA, and the fact that we now have Senate passing a bill, and it varies slightly from the House bill that was passed previously. Next steps, from an information sharing perspective, is the bills are going to be aggregated. Prior to becoming law, they're going to be evaluated. They're going to be the House and the Senate will go through a second evaluation, and they'll negotiate the minor changes and details within the two bills. Quite frankly, the differences between the two are so varying that won't necessarily make sense to the general audience of your show, but minor changes. So the organizations are going to be evaluating the bill in aggregation before it becomes law and signed by Obama.
You write in this piece, cyber information sharing is not about social security numbers, medical records, financial records, or other PII. From a cyber perspective, that information has no value. And you cite a couple of examples of cyber sharing platforms that don't even accommodate PII. Why do you think that has gotten privacy experts all in an update in an uproar? They're kind of freaking out about the whole idea of CISA.
They are. If you think about the cyber defenders, right? The cyber defenders are concerned about cyber indicators. Their goal is to protect government networks, commercial networks, and they need technical details in order to do that. They need IP addresses. They need email addresses. They need details relative to network traffic that is going to allow them to do the blocking and tackling. The organizations that, civil liberties organizations that are concerned about information sharing, they're concerned about data like Social Security numbers, PII, place of business, address, medical records being shared. And that has no value to the organizations that are actually doing the defense of our networks. They need IP addresses. They need to have TTPs relative to these adversaries. What are their tactics, their techniques, and their practices? That PII information, that personal protected information, is not of value to our systems that are doing the defense on networks today.
You write about the Anthem and Blue Cross Blue Shield hacks in the early part of this year, and you write, Anthem shared MD5 hashes, IP addresses, and threat actor email addresses surrounding the attack. Anthem didn't share any of the personal information of the almost 80 million clients affected. And then you write, most hacking victims aren't so quick to share CTIs. Do we have a sense of where that reticence comes from? Is it just surrounding the whole privacy issue, and they want to make sure they don't do anything that their users might be put off by?
So cyber threat information sharing has been happening for a long time. It just hasn't been an automated means. Individuals would trade spreadsheets, send emails back and forth, use instant messaging to share indicators and work analysis. With the maturity of the threat intelligence industry today, we've matured into these threat intelligence platforms. We provide a central location for organizations to aggregate all of their threat intelligence, apply risk scores to that threat intelligence, and allow them to share. So it's a much more automated mechanism, more centralized for these individuals, so they have a much larger audience to be able to communicate with. And the good guys haven't been winning for a while, right? You don't have to be an expert in cybersecurity to know that cyber is on the front page of every media outlet. So being able to automate things really shortens our window where the adversary can attack our systems. So if we can aggregate this information, attract the TTPs, the tactics, the techniques, and the practices, and really take that information across industries to protect and do the blocking and tackling, that makes a much better situation for us all.
Todd Helfrick of ThreatStream writing about the Cybersecurity Sharing Act of 2015 on federalnewsradio.com. And you point out the important factor here is that complying with CISA is voluntary. You're right, Anthem was only obligated to disclose it had been hacked, not to disclose threat indicators with business partners in the government. And with CISA, that won't change. Is that enough teeth for companies and the federal government to understand what the threat landscape looks like, Todd?
I definitely believe so. You know, organizations like DHS are providing, you know, capabilities to the federal government. And the commercial entities as well have what they refer to as ISACs, Information Sharing and Analysis Centers, and ISAOs, Information Sharing and Analysis Organizations. And those groups of entities are collaborating today and sharing threat indicators. And I think that CISA definitely helps them relinquish the liability, you know, provide them liability protections to share more readily. The concern historically has been if you have been identified as an organization that has gotten hacked, you're going to have more scrutiny upon yourself. And the liability protections help, the organizations protect themselves, right?
Is there potentially a perceptual benefit to the fact now that so many companies have been hacked? There's a lot of understanding, at least among people in the federal space and people who touch the federal space, that everybody's under attack, and that it seems to me, at least, that the stigma surrounding being a victim of a cyber attack is dissipating rather quickly.
So everyone is experiencing attacks today. The question is, are they seeing it or not?
Right.
Many times it's the business partners that pick up the phone and say, organization X, Y, and Z, you've been compromised because we're receiving traffic that is nefarious from you. So the attacks are on the increase. We are seeing more. And industry-focused, adversaries are being very strategic at their targets. They either want to get money, information, or, you know, want to actually purport hacktivism and demonstrate their political views. It's growing. And I think CISA is going to help do that blocking and tackling across our government enterprises.
Todd, we just have a minute or so left. You point out something that I think is really interesting toward the end of this piece. You write about the framework that CISA provides regarding sharing information, and you write, this is how the hackers do it. Adversaries share techniques, known vulnerabilities, malicious code, and farm out tricky projects to other experts. If investigators don't collaborate on all fronts, U.S. cyber defenses are headed for a crisis because innovation won't be happening on the right side of the fence. You believe that CISA will provide the grounds for innovation among the white hats, among the good guys?
Yes. Yeah, so our adversaries don't have the red tape. They don't have the policies and procedures in place. And what we've seen is the adversaries are actually selling their malicious code. They're selling their command and control botnet so that an individual or an organization, nation state, could take advantage of that network and penetrate systems. So there's this underground of systems that are collaborating. Adversaries are collaborating, sharing threat intel. It's high time that we do. Yes, we have the bureaucratic red tape. We have the policies and procedures to adhere to. But CISA is a giant leap forward to providing the ability to automate threat intelligence analytics and provide machine-readable intelligence so that can be consumed throughout your threat intelligence landscape. The challenge is, today, we have a significant shortfall in industry relative to cyber skill sets. From a sharing perspective, if I bring two disparate organizations together to be able to share, maybe one has a strength in computer forensics, maybe one has a strength in network security, and maybe another malware analysis, I bring those three disparate organizations together, and we have solved the gap of the cybersecurity skill sets. And at the same time, we have automated the consumption of threat intelligence to do the protection that we need.
Todd, it's a complicated topic. You've made it easy to understand in this piece. I thank you for sharing it with us on federalnewsradio.com, and I thank you for coming on and talking about it with me today.
Francis, thank you so much for having me on.